It's my turn. Is that what the silence is all about? Hi, kids. One thing you need to know from me is the text question of the day today, and we'll do one today, one tomorrow. I love a good Valentine's Day disaster story. So the text question of the day today is, from a man's perspective first, what's the worst gift a woman has ever given you for Valentine's Day? Okay, this is men texting me. What's the worst gift a woman's ever given you for Valentine's Day? Because we always go the other route, and we'll do this tomorrow, because men, you know, traditionally buy bad gifts in a lot of ways. But what's the worst gift you as a man have ever gotten for Valentine's Day? Because let's not kid ourselves. This is your holiday.
Do guys like gifts on Valentine's Day?
Are we supposed to give gifts?
Yeah, guys get gifts on Valentine's Day? This is news to me.
Well, apparently you don't give or get, so I don't even know. Yes, guys do get, you know, it'd be nice to be thought of. Dave knows this. It's nice to be thought of. Maybe a card?
Oh, sure.
Well, I always do cards. Yeah. Okay. Big deal.
All right. So this is why men don't feel like they're respected or thought of, because of this attitude.
Well, they don't want flowers, really. Chocolate.
No. There's an entire world of things you could buy for men that aren't flowers and chocolate.
But you don't want to spend a lot of money.
Yeah. It's not that kind of holiday.
It's just unbelievable.
Just go out to dinner and call it a night.
It's unbelievable men and women ever get together on any level.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own.
You are listening to Station WG.
Get it. Just get 2 hours and 49 minutes of this. I'd rather listen to this. You got to understand something. You listen to the show for whatever your commute is. I've got to hear every bit of it. I got my headphones on for the whole show. I can't get anything else on these headphones. It's 7:12 in the morning. Rick Pearson is standing by at Rap30 on social media, and you should follow Rick. I want him to follow him home. You should only do that if you know him. And read him in the Chicago Tribune online at chicagotribune.com. See him on Channel 9 and CLTV. And hear him here Sunday mornings on the Sunday Spin at 7 a.m. Who's the guest this weekend?
I've got Chris Mooney from the University of Illinois. We'll talk about President Obama's speech as well as next week's upcoming budget message from Governor Rauner.
That'll be the budget message about the budget we don't have or the one we're supposed to have?
That'll be a budget message about the budget for the next budget year while we still don't have a budget for this budget year.
You can't make it up. You can't make it up. 24 hours ago, we were talking about President Obama's speech to Springfield yesterday and how neither one of us were sure what the reason for going was. It appeared to be exactly what you said it was, a legacy trip, a, hey, fellas, it started here. I wanted to come back before I left office. And if you think in terms of the retiring athlete getting the rocking chair at all the cities he visits, this one seemed to mean a lot to him.
Yes. I mean, the fact, one thing I know just right off the bat, he spoke for almost an hour.
Right.
Typically, when he speaks and does public events, it's 20 minutes, 30 minutes. But he was very relaxed, very comfortable, telling some stories, reminiscing about his days in Springfield, about getting verbally hazed as a freshman lawmaker, sharing stories about some of the colleagues out in the audience. But at the same time, I kind of phrased it this way in the story, that it was almost like a valedictory type address,
right,
a farewell type address, and trying to provide, well, here's some of the lessons I've learned as president, and talking about this effort to try to achieve a better politics and overcome the ideological divides. And you know, it's nice rhetoric. It was a good speech, but in the end, it really doesn't change the kind of political dysfunction that exists in Washington, and really at a state level is symbolized by what's going on here in Illinois.
Yeah, and I threw this up on Twitter last night at Cochran Show. Everything about this speech was everything that was great about Barack Obama in 2007. He said all the right things, but too much of the presidency has been the words are right. The actions don't follow the words. Now, I'll give him credit. The State of the Union address, in words, he owned the fact that he didn't deliver on his 2007-2008 promise to bridge the divide. Congress needs to own their share of that. But I mean, you talk about being talked about right in front of you. Everybody in that room in leadership had to be looking up going, is he talking about me? Of course he's talking about me. He's talking about me. Because he brought up gerrymandering. He brought up not getting along. He brought up how we need to get along. He brought up concrete examples. He told some good stories. And yet, please correct me if I'm wrong, I think Madigan gets up today and it's just business as usual.
Yeah, in fact, lawmakers this morning in the House are preparing to try to move a bill similar to one that was vetoed by Governor Rauner to try to take much of the negotiations with state workers on a new contract. If an impasse is reached, that it would go to independent arbitration. And that we're back into the same fights over the issues of the governor, his turnaround agenda, his pro-business union weakening agenda, and Democrats that have an overwhelming majority in the legislature that are not willing to move against their traditional allies in organized labor. And that's kind of the nexus for where we are without a budget.
More with Rick Pearson in just a second. It's 7:16, and we'll come back right after we take care of some traffic and a couple of pieces of business. Mary's back with your morning trouble spots. What's up? 7:20. Rick's got to do a Channel 9 thing coming up here in a few minutes, but we still have a few more minutes with Mr. Pearson, who was in Springfield yesterday as the president spoke, as you said, for nearly an hour. And in the midst of the conversation, got a lot of laughs, got a lot of applause, got a couple of oohs, and mentioned Representative Duncan at one point specifically. What was that about?
Well, he was talking about the issue of, and throughout much of the speech, it was about you can compromise without surrendering principles, and that when you compromise to achieve a goal, you shouldn't be looked at as a sellout. At that point, Representative Ken Duncan on the Democratic side jumped up and said, yes. And then Obama responded by saying, we'll talk later, Duncan, sit down. Now, the issue at hand here is that Democrats in the Illinois House have a 71-vote veto-proof majority with their members. But under some votes and actions by Duncan, he's effectively denied Democrats that 71st veto-proof majority vote. And in fact, he has a primary challenge, a union-backed primary challenge, and Duncan is getting funding for his reelection from Bruce Rauner allies. So that's become also a subplot in this continuing impasse in Springfield.
And there was no private time with Madigan or Rauner, obviously.
The president spoke with Bruce Rauner on the tarmac after getting off Air Force One. They actually had kind of a probably 2 to 3 minute conversation there at the tarmac. There were some closed door meetings here in the State House, but it was largely, I would say, almost ceremonial. The president meeting with the members of the Senate from when he had served with them. In Senate President John Cullerton's office is actually the Senate chair that President Obama used when he was in the state Senate. A lot of picture taking going on. But again, the bottom line is, despite all of this talk, there was no great singing of kumbaya, and certainly nothing really. While the tone was, I would say, less partisan yesterday, we're right back into the soup again today.
Rick, that was my question to you, too. I asked Congressman Quigley this morning. You know, the pomp and circumstance surrounding this was great, and I know it was very ceremonious, but will this light a fire, do you think, under Mike Madigan? It's the president, and it's his own party.
Not really. The forces at play remain the same. As I said, you've got the budget speech coming up next week, and you know, how do you put together a budget for the next year when we don't have one for this year? The factors remain unchanged. And, rhetoric about talking about compromise and bipartisanship is all well and good. But without any desire on either side to change the hardline positions that they're in, to end their name calling, particularly in a political reelection year for the entire House and 40 members of the 59-member Senate, I just don't see anything changing in the near term.
There was an op-ed piece, an ed board piece, I guess, in the Tribune the other day about Rauner throwing some things on the table and being willing to negotiate, and where are you, Mike Madigan? Why has Rauner not been able to get more traction on that part of the story?
Well, one thing, one of the things that he says he's compromised on is the fact that he's taken right-to-work zones off the table. And what the opposite argument is, if you know you're not going to, if you know you're not going to get something in the first place, taking something off the table is not necessarily compromise. What both sides need to do is look at where they can move on the issues where they're most entrenched in. There's plenty of room for compromise in talking about things like workers' compensation rates, unemployment insurance, those kinds of things. But when it comes to the fundamental issues that Rauner wants, things that, affect collective bargaining, prevailing wage being paid, union prevailing wage on public works projects, those kinds of things, there isn't going to be any movement.
What is Madigan willing to move on, as far as you know?
Well, you know, that's part of the issue. Is the governor has talked about he wants a property tax freeze. The House has voted 20 times on a property tax freeze, but it doesn't include those issues involving collective bargaining, prevailing wage issues. So those bills aren't going anywhere. The governor's not signing them without those issues. I mean, we're just butting heads here. And that's part of the show that's been going on in Springfield is Madigan and Democrats saying, well, you want a property tax freeze? We're for a property tax freeze. Here's what we'll give you. But they don't contain those pro-business union weakening agenda items that Rauner insists have to happen.
I still go back to what I've been, you know, harping on with you guys for weeks, if not months now. You know, in a business deal, you can literally come to this kind of an impasse where you both have deal breakers and you can't make a deal. We don't have that option. You have to make a deal. We're talking about running the state of Illinois. You can't walk away.
Right. And in the meantime, you know, we're spending millions and millions of dollars that we don't have, lost tax revenue from the reduction in the income tax. We've got government basically by court order. It's something I've never seen before. And truly, if I knew a way out of the impasse, I'd be happy to suggest it, but I just don't see it.
I know you got to run to a TV. Thanks, my friend.
Thank you.
At RAP30, RAP30. That's Rick Pearson. And Sunday Spin, 7 a.m. Sunday morning. We'll come back, give you a couple of the texter suggestions on the worst gifts men have gotten for Valentine's Day. And Eric Edelstein will join us in a few moments as well. We've received, speaking of gifts from men, communication from NBC. And apparently NBC wants to make up with me. So we'll get back to that in a moment, too, on 720 WGN. What is NBC saying? They want to make up with me now?
Yeah, they're just assuring us that they are not breaking up with you, Steve, and they apologize about today.
What are they getting me? They get me flowers or anything?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Maybe I don't want flowers.
You want chocolate?
No, I just want Chuck to be on the show again.
Oh, he will.
So when will Chuck Todd be on again?
Well, possibly tomorrow. We're working on a time.
Do we need counseling, Chuck and I, do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, we could do some sort of counseling session on the air between you two.
What kind of therapist would take host-guest counseling?
Live.
Is this covered by insurance? Actually, no. No, it's not. Texters from the 630. Girlfriend got me a red and white banana hammock. That's not a great gift.
There's a Speedo, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They ride up on you. At least they are today. From the 224. No. Dave, you know, I've never worn a Speedo. Dave, is Speedo comfortable?
I really wouldn't be able to tell.
Little Red Riding Hood.
From the 224, worst gift I got for Valentine's Day as a man, chlamydia.
Oh. Awful.
Ow.
From the 630, thought we were going on a romantic getaway. She was acting kind of funny. Then I noticed there was only one ticket in the envelope. It was a one-way to Puerto Vallarta.
For her or for him?
I don't know.
If it's for him, that's not such a bad thing.
Well, from the 779, hey, Kev, you should have put the moves on the crowd at Crystal Lake on New Year's Eve. A couple of them had walkers and couldn't have gotten away.
I was eyeing a few. I was eyeing a few.
From the 847, one year the Dominic's Grocery had a Valentine table, and one item that came to me was a pre-printed list of honeydews on the back of a grocery list, also pre-printed, with a few lines on the bottom for notes. Something about me forgetting to get stuff. The size of a big box of Good and Plenty, she put it in a party bag. That was my gift. How I failed her. So again, we're looking for worst gifts men got from women today. We'll do worst gifts women get from men tomorrow. I have a feeling we'll be much busier tomorrow.
I think so too. Chlamydia, though, that's tops them all.
We were at the Flower and Garden Show one year, and Paul Conrad was on with me. He thought chlamydia was one of the flowers.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
I'd have a long talk with him. 312-981-7200 is the text or number.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
741, Eric Edelstein. ALMediaStrategy.com at Edel64 is where you follow him on social media. He joins us now. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing fine. And I liked President Obama's speech yesterday. I don't like the fact that it had no impact in Springfield, but of course I'm not surprised.
Well, no, and I don't think anybody thought it would, but I guess the moment we completely give up hope and stop saying let's aspire to something is the moment we're really, really in the toilet. So, you know, I give him credit. This is sort of part reunion nostalgia tour, part victory lap. And, you know, he gave, as you said, Steve, he gave a great speech. Is it going to change anything? You know, I think we all are quite skeptical about that.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I sense from him a lot of introspection, starting with the State of the Union address and moving forward from there, about how he wasn't able to deliver on, you know, uniting the two sides. And if he's going to own his failure in that, I'd like to hear Congress own theirs. But we haven't, have we?
No, we haven't. And there is something about never standing for election again that kind of makes you introspective and maybe speak a little more bluntly than you can when you're not. And it's a shame, but it's a function of human nature and politics. But I think you're seeing a president who sees the number of days going down in his presidency and trying to make an impact and also kind of be honest with what's coming ahead. So
I want to talk to you about the debate tonight, the Hillary Clinton Bernie Sanders debate. If Bernie Sanders gets one thing, he gets pop culture. Somebody on his team has got him everywhere he needs to be, from Saturday Night Live last week to Colbert last night, where he's having a beer on TV with Stephen Colbert. I mean, this guy is the least hip guy you would ever pick out of anything. And juxtaposed against all the hip things he's doing, it's one of the reasons kids love him.
Right. It's sort of the you're so uncool that you're cool, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of counter thing. Well, there's no doubt about it. I will say, you know, as we all predicted, that the first two, the Iowa and New Hampshire, would clear everything up. And now we know exactly where the nominating processes are going. And it's a clear path.
Thank God that happened.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we all knew that would happen. So it's everything's been cleared up. And we can go back to our lives now, not worry about it.
For everybody that wants to write off Hillary Clinton, we'll put the brakes on that for a second, because first off, it is the Clintons, and secondarily, there's a little something called superdelegates.
That's right. And
Eric Edelstein will explain superdelegates to us after we take care of traffic here in a second without giving us a headache, and why it's such a big deal, because believe it or not, after a race that was razor thin in Iowa and a blowout by Bernie Sanders in New Hampshire, you're not going to believe what the delegate count is. And it's not good for Bernie. So stand by for that. Also want to talk to you again about the debate as well for tonight, along with the superdelegate explanation. More with Eric Edelstein in just a second. And after 8 o'clock, Dean Richards, of course, and Tony Preckwinkle, Cook County Board President, live in studio. That'll be about 8:40. Now at 7:45, let's get back to Mary for a traffic trouble spots update. I didn't see this. If you buy Twitter stock today, you get a free puppy. So that's cool.
Okay, that part's not true. Well, you can go buy a new puppy.
True. Everything I see on Twitter today, it's the end of the universe. Might as well give away free puppies. It's 7:50. Eric Edelstein rejoins us, one of the most influential people in politics. I prefer to think of him as just my friend. I don't really like the influential stuff. All right, so let's talk about superdelegates. What's a superdelegate and what are their superpowers?
Well, the truth of these nominating processes for Democrats is we're here to promote democracy, not necessarily practice it. So,
listen, you're in politics. You're in politics, right. And truth isn't going to get you anywhere.
Yeah, I know. Sorry about that. But no, the truth is that there's a cadre of top elected officials, mostly senators and members of Congress and other sort of statewide governors who don't run for delegate, but get to go to the convention and cast a vote as a delegate in their individual states. And the vast majority of them are pledged to Hillary Clinton. And that's just a function of pure relationships and who they want to be the nominee. So those folks can switch. Some of them did off of Hillary in 08 to Obama. But I think in this dynamic, when there's a sense that Sanders it would be a disaster at the top of the ticket, which I think is the conventional wisdom at the moment, that gives her a big lead in the delegate count starting out.
Do the Republicans run it the same way in superdelegate world?
I'm not an expert on their process, but they typically, Republicans like even less democracy than Democrats do. So my guess is they do. What I do know is Republicans have kind of changed their nominating rules, so winner take all and proportionality, to try to get the nomination locked up sooner, which, you know, just creates more chaos because it plays into Trump's hands.
So, Andrea, do you have the superdelegate count right now, or the delegate count right now?
Well, for New Hampshire, 15 went to Sanders and 14 went to Hillary Clinton.
In New Hampshire. Which was a 30% blowout from Bernie Sanders. So this is where people, Eric, and you understand this.
Biggest one.
This is where people get frustrated, because if Bernie Sanders wins 61-29, they'd love to know how he ends up with basically a tie in delegates.
Right. Well, it's again, it's sort of a hedge against having a little too much democracy for people's appetite. You know, look, that's not new. Come on. We go back to the founders. No. They like democracy, but not too much. Representative democracy didn't mean that people got to make every decision.
It goes back to the whole electoral college versus the popular vote, too.
That's right.
But part of the reason that the representative democracy existed is because you couldn't actually reach the people in the wilderness because they were out with their musket trying to find food.
It's true.
You know, it's a little different now. Everyone has Twitter. Right. Where you can get a free puppy today if you buy stock. Everyone has connectivity. And granted, we all know people you'd like not to have a vote, Trump voters. But the fact of the matter is, if you're going to be talking about everybody deserves to vote, we should make it easier for everybody to vote, we got to find a way for those votes to matter more and not have the system appear to be rigged.
We do. But let me, in all seriousness, though, this goes back to the should two small states that are all white have this much influence. And you could argue that by having elected senators, congressmen, governors from all the states have more of a voice in the process, it levels that playing field out a little bit. So that would be the argument for it, in all seriousness, that it does sort of take away that outsized influence the two lily white tiny states have that don't really represent the rest of the country.
But Eric, the superdelegates, though, can switch their endorsements, so these numbers are not set in stone. Is that
correct?
They're
not binding, like the regular delegates.
Correct. That's right. And you know, famously, some African-American members of Congress who were for Hillary early on in 08 switched and went for Obama, and that was a huge, huge swing in momentum. So it is something to watch. I think this dynamic is a lot different, again, because I think people are in the party fear that Bernie, a Democratic socialist at the top of the ticket, is not really in the best interests of the party.
By the way, there's another drama going on the Democrat side in the DNC with Debbie Wasserman, Frusenglaus, and Farfik Nugent-Schultz, the Florida congresswoman, and whether or not she's going to be in charge of the DNC for the full run. Because she's not, by all accounts, that well-liked. I can't imagine switching that up in a presidential election year, but there's a lot of people that like to toss her off a building.
Well, typically what happens is when you have a nominee, that nominee ends up de facto being in charge of the DNC. And so whether they actually replace the chair or supplement with staff and whatnot, you see some of that going on. I don't particularly know whether that would affect Schultz or not.
Last question. The debate tonight is PBS. It'll be simulcast on CNN. And what does Hillary Clinton have to do to show that she's engaged and connected and really committed to win this thing?
I think she gave a terrific speech on Tuesday night. You know, there's something about her when she's humanized and a bit of the underdog. And you know, when she said, I certainly know what it means to fall down, and like a lot of Americans, but you get yourself back up. That message, that kind of fighter, and somebody who, you know, we can see our own weaknesses and the times that she fails, I think she just lets it rip a little bit more like that. Then I think you'll start to get the comeback kid thing going. And look, we're in the very early stages of this. You know, Sanders had a huge night on Tuesday, but she has inherent advantages. I think the key to watch will be, you know, Nevada is going to be close, but then South Carolina, where she starts out with a big lead, will he be able to chip into that, or will that sort of set her on more of a glide path? We'll see.
And if I hire you to represent me as a candidate and you run some numbers and see that there's an 85% distrust rate in me, how do you fix me?
You know, I just try to be honest, try to be authentic, try to take that weakness head on and say, you know, kind of what she did about, she made that comment about young people may not be with me, but I'm going to be with them. You know, and it's kind of saying, I'm going to take the weakness, take the things that people are critical of and just talk about them, be a human being. And I think when she does that, she'll be okay.
Bernie Sanders tonight, what do you expect?
Well, he seems to be a one-note Johnny. I mean, he's an unbelievably disciplined. They criticized Rubio for saying the same thing over again, but, you know, Sanders just keeps giving that stump speech. I think we're going to see more of that. You know, whenever my daughter walks in the room and he's speaking, she says, "Why is he shouting at me?" I said, "Don't take it personally. He's shouting at all of us." So
I'm not interested in your damn homework.
Right. He's doing very well with his populist message. I think you're just going to see more of that.
All right. Good luck. It sounds like you're a sea captain. Good luck.
It's loud here. I apologize.
Good luck out there on the waters.
All right. I will.
All right. See you, buddy. Eric Edelstein at Edel64, almediastrategy.com. That's funny because I'm sure he has a meeting at 8 o'clock and he's trying to talk to me while he's walking into his meeting.
I did agree with him, though. Didn't you find, though, when Hillary Clinton kind of gave the concession speech, if you will, the speech, but she sounded a little bit like the underdog, and I think people appreciated that. Okay, maybe I'm talking. Dave, when Hillary Clinton gave her speech on Tuesday night, why am I saying this to
look,
you?
I'm with you, Andrea.
Thank you, Mayor.
What have I said to you a million times in the last month? If Trump is a nominee, I'll vote for Hillary four times. And I think we all know how I feel about Hillary. The next time she's honest would be the first time.
All right, now. You got to look. Be like a New Hampshireite. You look at all the candidates. You go
have
to
an
all
open
the
mind.
Stump speeches.
That's as open as my mind will get on this issue.
When they all come here on our primary day, the days before, we're going to go. We're going to the rallies.
We are?
All of them.
Oh, okay.
You're not going to go, are you?
Probably not. This is Steve Cochran, and this would be then the Steve Cochran Show, number 585, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. No, I want to hear what everybody has to say. Wait, I've heard what everybody has to say.
I knew you were going to say that.
Back after this on 720 WGN. Is it my turn? Is that what the silence is all about? Hi, kids. One thing you need to know from me is the text question of the day today, and we'll do one today, one tomorrow. I love a good Valentine's Day disaster story. So the text question of the day today is, from a man's perspective first, what's the worst gift a woman has ever given you for Valentine's Day? Okay, this is men texting me. What's the worst gift a woman's ever given you for Valentine's Day? Because we always go the other route, and we'll do this tomorrow, because men, you know, traditionally buy bad gifts in a lot of ways. But what's the worst gift you as a man have ever gotten for Valentine's Day? Because let's not kid ourselves. This is your holiday.
Do guys like gifts on Valentine's Day?
Are we supposed to give gifts?
Yeah, guys get gifts on Valentine's Day? This is news to me.
Well, apparently you don't give or get, so I don't even know. Yes, guys do get, you know, it'd be nice to be thought of. Dave knows this. It's nice to be thought of. Maybe a card?
Oh, sure.
Well, I always do cards. Yeah. Okay. Big deal.
All right. So this is why men don't feel like they're respected or thought of, because of this attitude.
Well, they don't want flowers, really. Chocolate.
No. There's an entire world of things you could buy for men that aren't flowers and chocolate.
But you don't want to spend a lot of money.
Yeah. It's not that kind of holiday.
It's just unbelievable.
Just go out to dinner and call it a night.
It's unbelievable men and women ever get together on any level.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own.
You are listening to Station WG.
It is. just get 2 hours and 49 minutes of this. I'd rather listen to this. You got to understand something. You listen to the show for whatever your commute is. I've got to hear every bit of it. I got my headphones on for the whole show. I can't get anything else on these headphones. It's 7:12 in the morning. Rick Pearson is standing by at Rap30 on social media, and you should follow Rick. I want him to follow him home. You should only do that if you know him. And read him in the Chicago Tribune online at chicagotribune.com. See him on Channel 9 and CLTV, and hear him here Sunday mornings on the Sunday Spin at 7 a.m. Who's the guest this weekend?
I've got Chris Mooney from the University of Illinois. We'll talk about President Obama's speech as well as next week's upcoming budget message from Governor Rauner.
That'll be the budget message about the budget we don't have or the one we're supposed to have?
That'll be a budget message about the budget for the next budget year while we still don't have a budget for this budget year.
You can't make it up. You can't make it up. 24 hours ago, we were talking about President Obama's speech to Springfield yesterday and how neither one of us were sure what the reason for going was. It appeared to be exactly what you said it was, a legacy trip, a, hey, fellas, it started here. I wanted to come back before I left office. And if you think in terms of the retiring athlete getting the rocking chair at all the cities he visits, this one seemed to mean a lot to him.
Yes, I mean, the fact, one thing I know just right off the bat, he spoke for almost an hour.
Right.
Typically, when he speaks and does public events, it's 20 minutes, 30 minutes. But he was very relaxed, very comfortable, telling some stories, reminiscing about his days in Springfield, about getting verbally hazed as a freshman lawmaker, sharing stories about some of the colleagues out in the audience. But at the same time, I kind of phrased it this way in the story, that it was almost like a valedictory type address,
right,
a farewell type address, and trying to provide, well, here's some of the lessons I've learned as president, and talking about this effort to try to achieve a better politics and overcome the ideological divides. And you know, it's nice rhetoric. It was a good speech, but in the end, it really doesn't change the kind of political dysfunction that exists in Washington and really at a state level is symbolized by what's going on here in Illinois.
Yeah, and I threw this up on Twitter last night at Cochran Show. Everything about this speech was everything that was great about Barack Obama in 2007. He said all the right things. But too much of the presidency has been the words are right. The actions don't follow the words. Now, I'll give him credit. The State of the Union address, in words, he owned the fact that he didn't deliver on his 2007-2008 promise to bridge the divide. Congress needs to own their share of that. But, I mean, you talk about being talked about right in front of you. Everybody in that room in leadership had to be looking up going, is he talking about me? Of course he's talking about me. He's talking about me. Because he brought up gerrymandering. He brought up not getting along. He brought up how we need to get along. He brought up concrete examples. He told some good stories. And yet, please correct me if I'm wrong, I think Madigan gets up today, and it's just business as usual.
Yeah, in fact, lawmakers this morning in the House are preparing to try to move a bill similar to one that was vetoed by Governor Rauner to try to take much of the negotiations with the state workers on a new contract. If an impasse is reached, that it would go to independent arbitration. And that here we're back into the same fights over the issues of the governor, his turnaround agenda, his pro-business union weakening agenda, and Democrats that have an overwhelming majority in the legislature that are not willing to move and against their traditional allies and organized labor. And that's kind of the nexus for where we are without a budget.
More with Rick Pearson in just a second. It's 7:16, and we'll come back right after we take care of some traffic and a couple of pieces of business. Mary's back with your morning trouble spots. What's up? 7:20. Rick's got to do a Channel 9 thing coming up here in a few minutes, but we still have a few more minutes with Mr. Pearson, who was in Springfield yesterday as the president spoke, as you said, for nearly an hour. And in the midst of the conversation, got a lot of laughs, got a lot of applause, got a couple of oohs and mentioned Representative Duncan at one point specifically. What was that about?
Well, it was talking about the issue of, and throughout much of the speech, it was about you can compromise without surrendering principles, and that when you compromise to achieve a goal, you shouldn't be looked at as a sellout. At that point, Representative Ken Duncan on the Democratic side jumped up and said, yes. And then Obama responded by saying, we'll talk later, Duncan, sit down. Now, the issue at hand here is that Democrats in the Illinois House have a 71-vote veto-proof majority with their members. But under some votes and actions by Duncan, he's effectively denied Democrats that 71st veto-proof majority vote. And, in fact, he has a primary challenge, a union-backed primary challenge, and Duncan is getting funding for his reelection from Bruce Rauner allies. So that's become also a subplot in this continuing impasse in Springfield.
And there was no private time with Madigan or Rauner, obviously.
The president spoke with Bruce Rauner on the tarmac after getting off Air Force One. They actually had kind of a probably 2 to 3 minute conversation there at the tarmac. There were some closed door meetings here in the State House, but it was largely, I would say, almost ceremonial. The president meeting with the members of the Senate from when he had served with them. In Senate President John Cullerton's office is actually the Senate chair that President Obama used when he was in the state Senate. A lot of picture taking going on. But again, the bottom line is, despite all of this talk, there was no great thing of kumbaya, and certainly nothing really. While the tone was, I would say, less partisan yesterday, we're right back into the soup again today.
Rick, that was my question to you, too. I asked Congressman Quigley this morning. You know, the pomp and circumstance surrounding this was great, and I know it was very ceremonious, but will this light a fire, do you think, under Mike Madigan? It's the president, and it's his own party.
Not really. The forces at play remain the same. As I said, you've got the budget speech coming up next week, and you know, how do you put together a budget for the next year when we don't have one for this year? The factors remain unchanged. And, rhetoric about talking about compromise and bipartisanship is all well and good, but without any desire on either side to change the hardline positions that they're in, to end the name-calling, particularly in a political reelection year for the entire House and 40 members of the 59-member Senate, I just don't see anything changing in the near term.
There's an op-ed piece, an ed board piece, I guess, in the Tribune the other day about Rauner throwing some things on the table and being willing to negotiate. And where are you, Mike Madigan? Why has Rauner not been able to get more traction on that part of the story?
Well, one of the things that he says he's compromised on is the fact that he's taken right-to-work zones off the table. And what the opposite argument is, if you know you're not going to, if you know you're not going to get something in the first place, taking something off the table is not necessarily compromise. What both sides need to do is look at where they can move on the issues where they're most entrenched in. There's plenty of room for compromise in talking about things like workers' compensation rates, unemployment insurance, those kinds of things. But when it comes to the fundamental issues that Rauner wants, things that affect collective bargaining, prevailing wage being paid, union prevailing wage on public works projects, those kinds of things, there isn't going to be any movement.
What is Madigan willing to move on, as far as you know?
Well, you know, that's part of the issue. Is the governor has talked about he wants a property tax freeze. The House has voted 20 times on a property tax freeze, but it doesn't include those issues involving collective bargaining, prevailing wage issues. So those bills aren't going anywhere. The governor's not signing them without those issues. I mean, we're just butting heads here. And that's part of the show that's been going on in Springfield is, is Madigan and Democrats saying, well, you want a property tax freeze? We're for a property tax freeze. Here's what we'll give you. But they don't contain those pro-business union weakening agenda items that Rauner insists have to happen.
I still go back to what I've been, you know, harping on with you guys for weeks, if not months now. You know, in a business deal, you can literally come to this kind of an impasse where you both have deal breakers and you can't make a deal. We don't have that option. You have to make a deal. We're talking about running the state of Illinois. You can't walk away.
Right. And in the meantime, you know, we're spending millions and millions of dollars that we don't have, lost tax revenue from the reduction in the income tax. We've got government basically by court order. It's something I've never seen before. And truly, if I knew a way out of the impasse, I'd be happy to suggest it, but I just don't see it.
I know you got to run to a TV. Thanks, my friend.
Thank you.
At RAP30, RAP30. That's Rick Pearson. And Sunday Spin, 7 a.m. Sunday morning. We'll come back, give you a couple of the texter suggestions on the worst gifts men have gotten for Valentine's Day. And Eric Edelstein will join us in a few moments as well. We've received, speaking of gifts from men, communication from NBC. And apparently NBC wants to make up with me. So we'll get back to that in a moment, too, on 720 WGN. What is NBC saying? They want to make up with me now?
Yeah, they're just assuring us that they are not breaking up with you, Steve, and they apologized about today.
What are they getting me? They get me flowers or anything?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Maybe I don't want flowers.
You want chocolate?
No, I just want Chuck to be on the show again.
Oh, he will.
So when will Chuck Todd be on again?
Well, possibly tomorrow. We're working on a time.
Do we need counseling, Chuck and I, do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, we could do some sort of counseling session on the air between you two.
What kind of therapist would take host-guest counseling?
Live.
Is this covered by insurance? Actually, no. No, it's not. Texters from the 630. Girlfriend got me a red and white banana hammock. That's not a great gift.
There's a Speedo, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They ride up on you. At least they are today.
Bananas?
From the 224. No. Dave, you know, I've never worn a Speedo. Dave, is Speedo comfortable?
I really wouldn't be able to tell.
Little Red Riding Hood.
From a 224, worst gift I got for Valentine's Day as a man, chlamydia.
Oh. Awful.
Ow.
From the 630, thought we were going on a romantic getaway. She was acting kind of funny. Then I noticed there was only one ticket in the envelope. It was a one-way to Puerto Vallarta.
For her or for him?
I don't know.
If it's for him, that's not such a bad thing.
Well, from the 779, hey, Kev, you should have put the moves on the crowd at Crystal Lake on New Year's Eve. A couple of them had walkers and couldn't have gotten away.
I was eyeing a few.
From the 847, one year the Dominic's Grocery had a Valentine table, and one item that came to me was a pre-printed list of honeydews on the back of a grocery list, also pre-printed, with a few lines on the bottom for notes. Something about me forgetting to get stuff. The size of a big box of Good and Plenty, she put it in a party bag. That was my gift. How I failed her. So, again, we're looking for worst gifts men got from women today. We'll do worst gifts women get from men tomorrow. I have a feeling we'll be much busier tomorrow.
I think so, too. Chlamydia, though, that's tops them all.
We were at the Flower and Garden Show one year, and Paul Conrad was on with me. He thought chlamydia was one of the flowers.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
I'd have a long talk with him. 312-981-7200 is the texter number.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
741, Eric Edelstein. ALMediaStrategy.com at Adel64 is where you follow him on social media. He joins us now. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing fine. And I liked President Obama's speech yesterday. I don't like the fact that it had no impact in Springfield, but of course I'm not surprised.
Well, no, and I don't think anybody thought it would, but I guess the moment we completely give up hope and stop saying let's aspire to something is the moment we're really, really in the toilet. So, you know, I give him credit. This is sort of part reunion nostalgia tour, part victory lap. And, you know, he gave, as you said, Steve, he gave a great speech. Is it going to change anything? You know, I think we all
we all are quite skeptical about that.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I sense from him a lot of introspection, starting with the State of the Union address and moving forward from there, about how he wasn't able to deliver on, you know, uniting the two sides. And if he's going to own his failure in that, I'd like to hear Congress own theirs. But we haven't, have we?
No, we haven't. And there is something about never standing for election again that kind of makes you introspective and maybe speak a little more bluntly than you can when you're not. And it's a shame, but it's a function of human nature in politics. But I think you're seeing a president who sees the number of days going down in his presidency and trying to make an impact and also kind of be honest with what's coming ahead. So
I want to talk to you about the debate tonight, the Hillary Clinton-Bernie Sanders debate. Bernie Sanders, if Bernie Sanders gets one thing, he gets pop culture. Somebody on his team has got him everywhere he needs to be, from Saturday Night Live last week to Colbert last night, where he's having a beer on TV with Stephen Colbert. I mean, this guy is the least hip guy you would ever pick out of anything. And juxtaposed against all the hip things he's doing, it's one of the reasons kids love him.
Right. It's sort of the you're so uncool that you're cool, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of counter thing. Well, there's no doubt about it. I will say, you know, as we all predicted, that the first two, the Iowa and New Hampshire, would clear everything up. And now we know exactly where the nominating processes are going. And it's a clear path.
Thank God that happened.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we all knew that would happen. So it's everything's been cleared up. And we can go back to our lives now, not worry about it.
For everybody that wants to write off Hillary Clinton, we'll put the brakes on that for a second, because first off, it is the Clintons. And secondarily, there's a little something called superdelegates.
That's right. And
Eric Edelstein will explain superdelegates to us after we take care of traffic here in a second without giving us a headache, and why it's such a big deal. Because believe it or not, after a race that was razor thin in Iowa and a blowout by Bernie Sanders in New Hampshire, you're not going to believe what the delegate count is. And it's not good for Bernie. So stand by for that. Also want to talk to you again about the debate as well for tonight, along with the superdelegate explanation. More with Eric Edelstein in just a second. And after 8 o'clock, Dean Richards, of course, and Tony Preckwinkle, Cook County Board President, live in studio. That'll be about 8:40. Now at 7:45, let's get back to Mary for a traffic trouble spots update. I didn't see this. If you buy Twitter stock today, you get a free puppy. So that's cool.
Okay, that part's not true. Well, you can go buy a new puppy.
True. Everything I see on Twitter today, it's the end of the universe. Might as well give away free puppies. It's 7:50. Eric Edelstein rejoins us, one of the most influential people in politics. I prefer to think of him as just my friend. I don't really like the influential stuff. All right, so let's talk about superdelegates. What's a superdelegate and what are their superpowers?
Well, the truth of these nominating processes for Democrats is we're here to promote democracy, not necessarily practice it. So,
listen, you're in politics. You're in politics. Right. The truth isn't going to get you anywhere.
Yeah, I know. Sorry about that. But no, the truth is that there's a cadre of top elected officials, mostly senators and members of Congress and other sort of statewide governors, who don't run for delegate but get to go to the convention and cast a vote as a delegate in their individual states. And the vast majority of them are pledged to Hillary Clinton, and that's just a function of pure relationships and who they want to be the nominee. So those folks can switch. Some of them did off of Hillary in 08 to Obama. But I think in this dynamic, when there's a sense that Sanders it would be a disaster at the top of the ticket, which I think is the conventional wisdom at the moment, that gives her a big lead in the delegate count starting out.
Do the Republicans run it the same way in superdelegate world?
You know, I'm not an expert on their process, but they typically, Republicans like even less democracy than Democrats do. So my guess is they do. What I do know is Republicans have kind of changed their nominating rules, so winner take all and proportionality, to try to get the nomination locked up sooner, which, you know, just creates more chaos because it plays into Trump's hands.
So, Andrea, do you have the superdelegate count right now? or the delegate count right now?
Well, for New Hampshire, 15 went to Sanders and 14 went to Hillary Clinton.
In New Hampshire?
In New Hampshire.
Which was a 30% blowout from Bernie Sanders. So this is where people, Eric, and you understand this.
Biggest one.
This is
New
where people get frustrated, because if Bernie Sanders wins 61-29, they'd love to know how he ends up with basically a tie in delegates.
Right. Well, it's again, it's sort of a hedge against having a little too much democracy for people's appetite. You know, look, that's not new. Come on. We go back to the founders. No. They like democracy, but not too much. Representative democracy didn't mean that people got to make every decision.
It goes back to the whole electoral college versus the popular vote, too.
That's right.
But the part of the reason that the representative democracy existed is because you couldn't actually reach the people in the wilderness because they were out with their musket trying to find food.
It's true.
You know, it's a little different now. Everyone has Twitter, where you can get a free puppy today if you buy stock. Everyone has connectivity. And granted, we all know people you'd like not to have a vote, Trump voters. But the fact of the matter is, if you're going to be talking about everybody deserves to vote, we should make it easier for everybody to vote, we got to find a way for those votes to matter more and not have the system appear to be rigged.
We do. But let me, in all seriousness, though, this goes back to the should two small states that are all white have this much influence. And you could argue that by having elected senators, congressmen, governors from all the states have more of a voice in the process, it levels that playing field out a little bit. So that would be the argument for it, in all seriousness, that it does sort of take away that outsized influence the two lily white tiny states have that don't really represent the rest of the country.
But Eric, the superdelegates, though, can switch their endorsements, so these numbers are not set in stone. Is that
correct?
They're
not binding, like the regular delegates.
Correct. That's right. And you know, famously, some African-American members of Congress who were for Hillary early on in 08 switched and went for Obama, and that was a huge, huge swing in momentum. So it is something to watch. I think this dynamic is a lot different, again, because I think people are in the party fear that Bernie, a Democratic socialist at the top of the ticket, is not really in the best interests of the party.
By the way, there's another drama going on the Democrat side in the DNC with Debbie Wasserman Frusenglaus and Farfik Nugent Schultz, the Florida congresswoman, and whether or not she's going to be in charge of the DNC for the full run. Because she's not, by all accounts, that well-liked. I can't imagine switching that up in a presidential election year, but there's a lot of people that like to toss her off a building.
Well, typically what happens is when you have a nominee, that nominee ends up de facto being in charge of the DNC. And so whether they actually replace the chair or supplement with staff and whatnot, you see some of that going on. I don't particularly know whether that would affect Schultz or not.
Last question. The debate tonight is PBS. It'll be simulcast on CNN. And what does Hillary Clinton have to do to show that she's engaged and connected and really committed to win this thing?
I think she gave a terrific speech on Tuesday night. You know, there's something about her when she's humanized and a bit of the underdog. And you know, when she said, I certainly know what it means to fall down, and like a lot of Americans, but you get yourself back up. That message, that kind of fighter, and somebody who, you know, we can see our own weaknesses and the times that she fails, I think she just lets it rip a little bit more like that. Then I think you'll start to get the comeback kid thing going. And look, we're in the very early stages of this. You know, Sanders had a huge night on Tuesday, but she has inherent advantages. I think the key to watch will be, you know, Nevada is going to be close, but then South Carolina, where she starts out with a big lead, will he be able to chip into that, or will that sort of set her on more of a glide path? And we'll see.
And if I hire you to represent me as a candidate and you run some numbers and see that there's an 85% distrust rate in me, how do you fix me?
You know, I just try to be honest, try to be authentic, try to take that weakness head on and say, you know, kind of what she did about, she made that comment about young people may not be with me, but I'm going to be with them. You know, and it's kind of saying, I'm going to take the weakness, take the things that people are critical of, and just talk about them, be a human being. And I think when she does that, she'll be okay.
Bernie Sanders tonight, what do you expect?
Well, he seems to be a one-note Johnny. I mean, he's an unbelievably disciplined. They criticized Rubio for saying the same thing over again, but, you know, Sanders just keeps giving that stump speech. I think we're going to see more of that.
You know, whenever my daughter walks in the room and he's speaking, she says, "Why is he shouting at me?" I said, "Don't take it personally. He's shouting at all of us." So
I'm not interested in your damn homework.
Right. He look, he's doing very well with his populist message. I think you're just going to see more of that.
All right. Good luck. It sounds like you're a sea captain.
Yeah,
so
sorry,
good luck.
It's loud here. I apologize.
Good luck out there on the waters.
All right, I will.
All right, see you, buddy. Eric Edelstein at Edel64, almediastrategy.com. That's funny because I'm sure he has a meeting at 8 o'clock, and he's trying to talk to me while he's walking into his meeting.
I did agree with him, though. Didn't you find, though, when Hillary Clinton kind of gave the concession speech, if you will, the speech, but she sounded a little bit like the underdog, and I think people appreciated that. Okay, maybe I'm talking. Dave, when Hillary Clinton gave her speech on Tuesday night, why am I saying this to
look,
you?
I'm with you, Andrea.
Thank you, Mayor.
What have I said to you a million times in the last month? If Trump is a nominee, I'll vote for Hillary four times. And I think we all know how I feel about Hillary. The next time she's honest would be the first time.
All right, now. You got to look. Be like a New Hampshireite. You look at all the candidates. You go
have
to
an
all
open
the
mind.
Stump speeches.
That's as open as my mind will get on this issue.
When they all come here on our primary day, the days before, we're going to go. We're going to the rallies.
We are?
All of them.
Oh, okay.
You're not going to go, are you?
Probably not. This is Steve Cochran, and this would be then the Steve Cochran Show, number 585, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. No, I want to hear what everybody has to say. Wait, I've heard what everybody has to say.
I knew you were going to say that.
Back after this on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than one night should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me, kiss me.
8:11 in the morning, and Dean Richards is here from Channel 9. A lot of you may know Dean. He's a young broadcaster struggling to make his way in the business. Oh, wait. No. You've been around a long time, and you're Dean.
Happy to be with you here on WGN. It's a dream come true for me, Steve.
Hold on. Let me check the crocometer. Oh, that's about a nine and a half.
Wow. I almost threw up a little while I was saying that.
Thought you might. I was talking to Eric Edelstein, one of our gurus in politics, a few moments ago.
Yes.
Every time I turn around in every, you know, hip corner of pop culture, who do I see? Bernie Sanders.
Yep.
They are not missing this on any level. If you watch Straight Outta Compton, Bernie Sanders is one of the original members.
He makes a cameo.
Right. Originally, the group was called BNWA.
That's right.
A lot of people don't know.
That's exactly
he
right.
He was originally part of that.
And he was a Beastie Boy. He doesn't get a lot of credit for it, yep. But he was a Beastie Boy. No sleep till Brooklyn.
He was on Stephen Colbert last night.
Having a beer.
I wasn't able to stay awake for the interview, but he comes out during the monologue, and he was pretty funny during the monologue. But also, Bernie Sanders was part of Stephen Colbert's opening monologue, where he was recapping the New Hampshire election results. And he played this blooper from MSNBC, in which the anchor accidentally called him Bernie Sandwich.
Right.
And then Colbert goes off on this hilarious thing. It's even funnier when you see it, but it makes sense just to hear this sandwich bit.
Yeah, we're going to play the clip here.
Colbert did. Yeah,
we'll play the clip, but it's important what Dean just said, because you have to see the choreography that goes in. Every time Colbert mentions a sandwich here, know that on TV, he pulled out the actual sandwich from another crevice or compartment or something else.
From under his desk.
Pretty impressive. Here you go.
You see that play out in different ways in both Trump's particularly closing message and railing against pharmaceutical companies and the like, and Bernie sandwiches.
That's right, Bernie sandwiches. A name everyone can get behind because he's not a member of the old boys club.
Club sandwich.
He fights the rich guys on behalf of the po' boys.
Po' boy.
Someone with a trusting, open face. And open face. Will surely win Florida by appealing to Cubans.
Cuban sandwich.
This is a French dip. So he is a Jew-ish candidate. Plus, he has He has a long history of supporting the LGBT community.
That's right, LGBT.
Sure, the Democratic establishment may have a beef with him now because he's been rubbing them the wrong way. And I know it may sound hoagy, and he doesn't have it all wrapped up yet, but in times like these, his supporters believe we need a hero.
Yeah, with each mention of a sandwich.
Every sandwich was actually pulled out. You know, how many times do you think they rehearsed that?
Oh, my God. There was amazing choreography. Amazing choreography to see it, but it's still just, well, that's like brilliant writing.
Yeah, that's
brilliant, brilliant, brilliant writing.
But here's the thing. When you sit down in a room with a bunch of funny people to write that, you go, is this stupid? Is this just us sitting around laughing because it's funny? And then when you sit down and actually have somebody like Colbert could pull it off, well, there you go.
No, we've never had that conversation. Is this stupid?
No, we just do it.
Is this dumb that we're doing?
Yeah, and a lot of people will tell you when Dean and I are on together, stupid's a big winner.
We go for it. If we don't hit the stupid factor, we don't do it. If
Sam,
we in some way feel it's not stupid, you're not going to hear it on this show.
I feel like we've disappointed you. Am I the sexiest dad alive? Dean will tell us in just a second. Also, is there a new Harry Potter book coming? And Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson on the new Zoolander still to come. Stand by for all of that from Dean Richards, entertainment reporter extravaganza, superstar guy from Channel 9. But first at 8:15, back to Mary. He's really hogging the show today. Mary's talking a lot about traffic. I don't know if you noticed that. Back to Dean Richards. This is...
I love this song.
What is this? This is a Ode to Harry?
it's a Harry, Harry world.
That's it.
I think was the...
All right, I'm confused because I thought the whole Harry Potter thing was done, and now there's an eighth book?
There was a stage play that J.K. Rowling wrote, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
Harry Potter's Cabaret?
Harry Potter's Cabaret. That is opening in London, and they have taken that and turned it into a book that will be released here in the U.S. on July 31st. So this will essentially be the eighth Harry Potter book in the series that will pick up Harry Potter's story 19 years after the last adventure. Harry Potter now is the father of three, so 19 years later he's got, you know, like teenage kids, you know, I guess, you know, dealing with all the same things that teenage kids deal with, you know, want to borrow the car, want to borrow your magic wand. Dad, can I borrow your invisibility cloak? So, you know, it's Harry Potter as a husband.
Totally beat dad at Quidditch.
Three, exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah, so I missed the boat on this a little bit. I mean, Ross was really into it, Amy a little bit, and went to the movies, and the movies are good, but it's just not my thing.
People love reading that. People are very excited that, you know, because the Harry Potter books are credited with bringing back a resurgence in actual picking up a book and reading.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah, and, you know, that's spurred this whole thing. So I imagine this will continue. And, hey, if you can get a little more blood out of the old Harry Potter rock, why not?
And is J.K. Rowling going to do another movie?
They have not said anything about a movie yet. I'd be shocked if there wasn't going to be more.
Of course. Dean, sponsored by the Captain James A. Lovell Federal Health Care Center. Just speaking of stage plays, To Kill a Mockingbird, a new version of that's coming?
Yeah, yesterday we told you that Frozen is coming to Broadway. And now, believe it or not, I guess I figured that they certainly must have done To Kill a Mockingbird at one time or another over the last 50 years.
Wait, it's never been on Broadway?
It's never been on Broadway.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Never been on Broadway, according to the reports.
Great play.
Which is cool, but especially cool is that it's going to be the book, the original book, not the sequel that came out last year. It's going to be adapted by Aaron Sorkin, which is huge.
Wait. Does that mean it's going to have the snappy dialogue and stuff?
Yeah, maybe.
Because this is Southerners. They're supposed to talk slow.
Well, that's left in the hands of Aaron Sorkin. You never know.
Oh,
Steve,
no.
Steve, you can't handle the truth.
Oh, no.
Words of Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah.
Harry Sorkin. Combining all my stories together.
Yeah, it's faster if you just put them all in
one. Atticus Harry Sorkin is adapting this.
Yeah, Atticus Finch being snappy. I don't know if I'm up for that.
We'll see how it comes out. The producers are promising that Atticus will remain true to the original book. So hopefully that means they're not going to turn him into like a New York lawyer or something like that.
I like Aaron Sorkin.
If it doesn't fit, you must have quit.
Yeah, I don't know. All right, now you've been stalling, but I know you wanted to announce that I've been named the sexiest dad alive. You want to tell me now?
If I had the script prepared, I had everything ready to go, and it turns out there must have been some sort of small snag.
What?
In the voting at the end. Because it turns out that Steve was not named sexiest dad alive.
This is an outrage.
You came in probably a very close 22nd or 20th.
Actually, I did check the tally. How much paper do you have there?
Big story.
Steve is crumpling the Declaration of Independence, apparently.
All right, who is it?
Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, I suppose that's all right.
Ryan Reynolds.
I like Ryan Reynolds.
He's a good guy. Really, really, really good guy. His father to a one-year-old daughter. Get this.
Well, how can he be the sexiest dad alive? You're barely a dad at one.
Well, his daughter's name is James.
What?
Isn't that weird?
James, J-A-M-E-S?
J-A-M-E-S. He and his wife, actress Blake Lively.
Well, they decided not to name her Ralph?
apparently that was already taken. Hank, not available.
I guess I've seen J-A-Y-M-E-S. I didn't. James.
J-A-M-E-S is what I have here.
Bit of a goofball.
Maybe you can call her Jamie. You know?
Jamie as.
Jimmy.
Why don't you name her Jamie then?
Yeah.
See, this is why Ryan Reynolds shouldn't have been chosen over me. Sure, he's incredibly good looking and a full head of hair and he's 37 or 38 or 39 and I'm 54 and nearly dead. But other than that, I think we're a dead heat.
He says having a daughter was a dream come true. He never admitted it out loud or to anyone else, but he said, I've always really wanted a little girl. It's the best.
Yeah, it is.
How cute is that?
It's not kidding.
How cute is that?
Ross Cochran would tell you the same thing. And then finally, Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson are coming out with that important sequel to Zoolander. I like the first one. Am I going to like this one?
You are going to like it. I'm going to give you the full review on it tomorrow. But the interesting history of this movie, you know, the original Zoolander came out 1 week after September 11th, 2001.
No, I didn't remember that.
America not really in the mood for a silly comedy about, male models. So the original film was actually a bomb at the box office. Nobody went to see it. It was discovered in DVD later on and became kind of a cult film. So when I was in New York last week and I talked with Owen Wilson and Ben Stiller, who also directed the film, he wrote the film, you know, what was the deal with the delay in getting this movie out?
It was a gradual decision over the years. You know, when we first made the movie, it wasn't really a big hit. I think we would have done a sequel right away if anybody had wanted one. But nobody was clamoring for one. We just kept feeling that there were people out there who were fans of the movie, and it would be fun to try to do it before it was too late.
Fun to get back to these characters. And it's like so over the top and so, you know, silly, really great fun.
Yeah, it was fun to play the characters again and to be in Rome. And usually when you're acting, you're kind of, you want to be sort of subtle. You don't want to be over the top. But yeah, a lot of the direction that we would get is more.
From the director?
From the director.
Yeah. He's right here. He can hear you.
So it's his fault.
Yeah.
By the way, was it Ben Stiller breathing that heavy? Was he in the middle of some sort of cardiac event there?
Where the microphones were. I don't know if he had a nasal microphone placed someplace.
So tomorrow you'll review that and the other movies.
There's a bunch of it. There's that. There's your best friend Ryan Reynolds' new movie, Deadpool, which is also great. I'm not reviewing.
Yeah, whatever.
There's this How to Be Single romantic comedy and Michael Moore's new movie. Mm-hmm. Is coming out tomorrow.
Boy, that's a big list of what do I care least about. So, all right, buddy, thank you.
Bye.
And Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle live in studio in a few moments. Looking forward to that. A couple more of the worst Valentine's Day gifts women give to men Texters, you're welcome at 312-981-7200. We'll get to that and the big story coming up on 720 WGN. It's 8:30, the big story time here, but a friend of mine just texted me. I don't want to get him in trouble, but this is the Valentine's Day topic.
Mm-hmm.
He said, my wife once gave me a grab bag. It had a tongue scraper, a man groover, groomer, a back shaver, and a jug of Viagra. Happy Valentine's Day.
Well, was she trying to tell him something or what?
Dude from his wife in the 920, worst Valentine's Day gift, a set of soup spoons. Hey, good news from the 312. My wife gave me salmonella poisoning.
How did she give him that?
She cooked.
Ah.
She wasn't trying to.
She didn't give him chlamydia like the other guy.
No, that's a different recipe.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
8:40 in the morning, and Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle joins us live in studio. First and foremost, thanks for doing this. It's a cold morning, and you're nice enough to come in instead of doing a phone call. So thanks for being here.
Sure enough.
Yesterday, I don't know what you were struck by the president's speech, but as the president comes in to Springfield and says all of these things that are hopeful about unity and parties getting along and everything we need to hear, you would hope that it would have some impact. Am I too much of an idealistic fool that I hope it does?
I wish I believed.
I'm an idealistic fool at this point.
I didn't say that. I wish I believed that there was some imminent solution to the present impasse in Springfield. I don't.
Now, but in regards to the speech, I think it's an interesting time the president's in because I mentioned this a couple times this morning, but at the State of the Union, he seemed to take some credit for not being able to bring the parties together. But I haven't heard anything from Congress owning their part of that.
Well, I think this is a very difficult time in this country, and the parties seem to be at odds in a way that is, I won't say unprecedented, but really, I think, damaging to our democracy. You know, particularly here in Illinois, when you think about the fact that folks who have autistic children are not able to get services they need and seniors, home health care, those are real issues. But I think, and for me at the county level government, you know, the state owes us $66 million for our last fiscal year, which ended November 30th, not to mention the unfunded liabilities that we have because they're not paying us for this fiscal year, which started December 1st. But the biggest problem that we have as a result of this budget impasse is people, I think, are losing faith in their government. And in a democracy, it's really important that people believe that their government can work. So unfortunately, I'm pretty discouraged.
Well, as am I, and I don't understand the end game here because, you know, we've talked about before how it's coming to your door. And you spoke this week about it, in particular the impacts of Cook County that you're talking about now as well. For everybody that just wants to get on with their life and you're cynical and disgusted with politics and you can't fix the system, it is what it is. People need to be involved now more than ever at a time where they've never felt more disconnected about it.
Right. I mean, I always say, so I'm a history teacher, I always say democracy is at the same time the best and the most fragile form of government on earth. The best and most fragile for the same reason. It depends on an active, engaged citizenry. And when people feel that government's not working and get discouraged and don't participate, the problems are magnified. So we're at a very difficult time here. I wish I felt more optimistic.
Tony, I always we've had Leslie Munger on several times as well, and I always ask, you know, when will D-Day be? I mean, everybody's feeling this crunch, but particularly at the county level, too.
You're talking about capital D, because we're at little D now, yeah, I think,
exactly.
And little D is getting bigger.
Exactly. But the state just continues to fall further behind in not paying its bills, and that is going to have a huge impact, more so at the county level as well, when it comes to job loss and you know, hard-hitting measures that need to be taken.
It's not just our county. It's every local unit of government in the state. I understand, although they haven't talked about it because they've got other things on their plate, that the problems are several orders of magnitude worse at the city. But as I said, the state owes us $66 million for this fiscal year that ended November 30th, plus the fact that we're continuing to deliver services that are supposed to be funded by the state, and we haven't gotten any money for them. In particular, things that I've talked about earlier this week, child support, the program, child support enforcement, the program that works at Adult Redeploy Illinois to try to help people who've been involved in criminal justice system, keep them from returning to our jails and prisons. Those are really important programs, but we can't afford as a county to just to fund them with no state support, zero. I mean, they're not paying their bills at all. So, you know, and on the child care side, I think it's $18 million. On the adult redeploy side, this program that helps people who've involved in the criminal justice system, it's another $12 million. I mean, we've got to decide probably by June whether or not we can continue to operate a number of programs that are supposed to be funded by the state or are supported by federal grants and then a state match, and we're not getting any money for them.
Yeah,
whether we can continue.
And here's the thing. Again, what does it say about a state that doesn't protect and take care of its most needy or its most vulnerable programs to help people? Because it starts there, and then it goes to all the things that affect every bit of your life. We'll do traffic here. We'll come back. The one thing I mentioned earlier, Madam President, Tony Preckwinkle's here, is I don't know what the end game is. Because, again, this is not a business deal where two sides can go, you know what, we just couldn't agree, so we're going to walk away. You have to have an agreement. So I'd be interested to get your take on that right after we check with the cars here. First, Mary on 720 WGN. Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle is here. So in an era, or I should say in a world, where you have to have a deal and you can't walk away because you don't agree, do you have any hope for maybe the Cullerton-Rauner discussions that were going on a couple of weeks ago? Is there anything that you can latch on to for the rest of us?
I'm not sure, but, you know, there are actually three actors here. It's not just President Cullerton and Governor Rauner. It's also Speaker Madigan.
Right.
And, you know, let me just say, so I'm a Democrat, and I suppose this will come across as partisan, but I'm surprised that Governor Rauner has chosen to push what he calls his pro-business agenda. Democrats would describe it differently. At the expense of coming to an agreement on the budget. In the county, for example, there are things that we wanted to do around access to affordable housing, around immigration issues and detainees in our jail. But I never said I'm not going to work with the Board of Commissioners on a budget until we get agreement on these other issues that I think are important. You know, the budget is the budget, and it's critical to the operation of the government that you have a budget and that you implement that budget. And these other issues, frankly, in my view, should be ones that the governor decides to work on and commits to work on and tries to mobilize support for. But we've got to have a budget. And I think there are two states, Steve and Andrea, that don't have budgets at this point, Illinois and Pennsylvania, out of 50. I mean, that's not good company to be in. We've got 48 responsible states and two in which we could argue our leadership is irresponsible.
And shouldn't it be the bare minimum? You know,
yes, the function of government. Right. Figure out what your revenues are going to be, what your expenses are going to be, and move forward. Yes.
Right. And the amount of time and energy that's been taken to talk about this, because, you know, it's been nothing but talk, is now resulting, as we've discussed, in real pain on people.
Yeah. No. Do you think President Obama's speech will have any sort of an impact on the Michael Madigans or those who maybe are preventing from this budget from moving forward? I mean, it's the president and it's his party. There has to be some sort of movement.
I'm grateful that the president came. I'm not optimistic about what the impact of his speech might be.
It really does come down to there's got to be some grown-ups in the room, and so far the grown-ups have acted like children. And by the way, on all sides. But help me understand something. So from a leadership standpoint, if the governor, and I know you don't speak for either side here, but if the governor were to drop the "I'm not doing anything until I get this," and talked about negotiating things that the Madigan-Cullerton Democrat side really are interested in, where do you think the meat point is? Is there something obvious that we're missing in covering this that looks like something where you could make a deal in the middle?
Well, let me talk about workman's comp, for example. My own state senator, Kwame Raoul, worked on workman's comp reform several years ago. And he said to me personally, you know, we thought we made some important changes. If the governor thinks that there are additional things that we need to, you know, focus on and is prepared to work with the Democrats, I'm prepared to lead that effort. He was assigned by President Cullerton to work on this issue. He said, "I'm prepared to do that." But you know, that's sort of not where we are. It's a demand that's out there without a detailed discussion about what we exactly might do around this issue that both Democrats and Republicans could agree on. So he's been frustrated because he said, you know, I'm willing to look at this again. We looked at it, what, I don't know, 2 years ago, something like that. But there's sort of this global demand, but not a lot of detailed nitty-gritty, you know, what exactly could we come to agreement on? So I think that's been frustrating too. It's not good enough just to say, you know, here's my business turnaround agenda. Let's figure out specifically, you know, what it is that I want, and then look at what the Democrats think. There got to be some things which people can agree on. So even if it isn't your whole, you know, even if it isn't the whole
right.
pie, there's right. got to be there's a slice there somewhere that people could agree on. Let's try to look at that slice, and you know, and the governor should declare victory. I mean, if he can get even a little bit of the kinds of things that he wants. But I think that his attitude is, you know, you give me all of this, or we're not having a budget, and that I don't see where that gets us except continued impasse.
Well, the basic premise being we can't continue to do business as usual, but we've got to still to do business in this state. So as you just said, in any negotiation, I want this, you want that, let's check off the ones we're never going to agree on, but let's find common ground and get to the basic function of government, which is we have bills, pay our bills. You can't innovate on anything because we're stuck in the mud on all of this.
It's very true.
If Leslie Munger has been here recently, she probably can speak to this, but the state now owes billions and billions of dollars to its vendors and to local units of government,
yep.
like the county and like the city. And wait a minute, is it that's okay? I don't think that's okay.
No, of course it's
President,
not.
President, the state's fiscal year ends June 30th. Can we hold on until then with no layoffs and no fee increases, anything of that sort? After that, and perhaps hard action, as we were talking about, job cuts might have to happen. But can we hang on until that? Is there any sort of light at the end of that tunnel?
What we're looking at in the county, and I can't speak for any other local of unit of government, is June 30th is our hard stop. We're going to have to figure out when the state ends its fiscal year whether or not we're going to continue to try to deliver services which the state has not paid for in the previous fiscal year. So that we'll be entering fiscal year 2017, and there's no budget for 2016, and we haven't gotten the reimbursements or the payments for programs that we've delivered, you know, for decades with state support. For us, it's pretty much June 30th. We're going to have to figure out then what we're going to do going forward. And I think that's true probably for other units of government as well. Are you going to carry the Without a fiscal year 2016 reimbursement, are you going to carry programs into fiscal year 2017?
And as you said, the city is in rough shape and maybe even a bigger squeeze than what you're dealing with in the county. Other municipalities around the state are certainly not immune to any of this. So people listening now who maybe are starting in the last few weeks at least understand the severity of this, that it's not just us yammering about it or politicians talking about it. What do they do? I've always said to people, you know, call your representative, email your representative, tell them you want action. But can you do anything beyond that?
Well, I think people need to hear from their constituents, the members of the General Assembly and the governor. I think it's really important for people to communicate that they're disturbed about this because the way in which they've kind of stumbled along until now. State employees are still on their jobs. You know, you still can get your driver's license renewed and all of that. You still can get services from the state. I think people don't realize the sort of ripple impacts of what's happening unless they got a particular service from the state. And I mentioned, you know, families that have autistic kids and aren't getting those services anymore, seniors that aren't getting home health care. They may not be impacted. But as governments like our county government have to make cuts and stop programs because they're not getting state support, there will surely be a greater awareness of the difficulties in which we all find ourselves. And hopefully that will spur people to action. But as I said, I think we have to separate the ideological concerns about where we are in this state from just the basic government responsibility of having a budget. And I gave examples from the county around, as I said, how we dealt with undocumented detainees in the criminal justice system, how we dealt with access to affordable housing. Those are initiatives that I supported along with members of the body, but we did not say we're going to have to do these or I won't support a budget. I mean, that's...
No, you can draw a line in the sand, but that line in the sand has to be something that is for the good of the people, not for the good of winning the argument.
And I think that it's not arguable. It's not arguable that the state is being hurt by its failure to have a budget, because it makes us look like the state is just dysfunctional and hopeless. And as I said, that's bad for us, and that's bad for the perception of the state of Illinois across the country. How can it be a good thing that we're one of two states in the whole country that doesn't have a budget?
Well, and we're seeing it statistically. We're seeing it with people leaving the state. We're seeing it with businesses leaving the state, and people are making decisions they feel they have to make in their lives. And for everybody that leaves and every business that leaves, the pile of money, the revenue goes down again. Every day that matters, every day matters because the wound gets bigger. And you're not going to be able to just Band-Aid it. So, well, listen, I very much appreciate you coming in, because a lot of people in your position would love to just pick up the phone and have a couple of minutes on the phone. But I appreciate your concern about this and your passion about it, and I hope I hope we can do it again.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Andrea. I appreciate the invitation to come and talk about these important issues with your audience.
Yeah, and thank you for doing it again. All right, a couple minutes before 9. News next on 720 WGN.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with a Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
It's the only song in America you never get sick of, because it's always good news. Breakfast of the Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. And Dave Ennett, we have a special guest in studio just ahead of Mr. Taves.
It's a big honor to have this gentleman with us here this morning.
The best in the business. I include Dave Ennett in it. Whenever Dave Ennett does a Northwestern game, whether it's football or basketball, you know it's terrific. But there's nobody better at the mic than Doc Emrick, NBC Sports, NBC Sportsnet. And one of the busiest guys in America. Of course, you're in town playing video games. What are you doing?
Yeah, we're recording video games. Eddie Olchek and I and Ray Ferraro, who is out in Vancouver, goes to the studio there. And it's for NHL 17, which comes out in the fall. So you have to do the work sometime. And this is it. And I'm glad, because the Hawks are in town.
And when you get the scripts, are they realistic, or do you have to tweak them to make them sound like they're in your voice?
There's no script. You walk in and you sit down and you're staring at a monitor that has a subject on it, but no action. And they say, okay, goalie's pulled, last minute of play. They can't get out of their own end. Do it.
Really?
You can't use the names of players and you can't use the names of teams. And then after you do that, they ask you to do 4 more different languages so that there's a variety. And you're a little wasted by the end of the day, but it's fun.
I bet it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a challenge, but it's fun.
Yeah, I bet it's fun. Joining us now, the captain of your Chicago Blackhawks, Jonathan Taves. You know, Taser, we brought in the big guns. It's not just Dave Ennett and me. Doc Emmerich's here as well.
It's always it's always good to hear your voice, Johnny.
I call in today.
Yeah, you know, getting the Taser to do the Steve Cochran Show, you got to get Emmerich on.
That's right.
How are you, bud?
Not too bad. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fine. I know you got to run to a meeting in a few, but Breakfast with the Blackhawk with Jonathan Taves. And we were talking a minute ago off the air. Your face-off percentage is as good as ever. What's the secret? What are you doing?
I don't know. Just trying to get the puck, trying to win them. I guess, I don't know. No secret, really. I got nothing good for you on that one.
I got a theory. Since you're the captain, you know, you can talk to these guys in the funny shirts. Are you promising a linesman a steak or something? What are you doing?
Well, it doesn't hurt to try and become buddies with a couple of linesmen. Sometimes you get frustrated and you yell at them. I don't think that helps, so I've been trying to stay away from that as well. So maybe it helped a little bit. You never know. You got to try and get the edge any way you can.
What's the secret of your overtime success this year? Because here's how I feel. I hate to give up the point to anybody, but I feel like if we go to overtime every time, it's just eventually Taser gets the puck, he scores, we win, we go home.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the 3-on-3 makes a huge difference, to be honest. I was talking about this with a couple of guys the other day. The difference between 4-on-4 and 3-on-3 is incredible. For me, I mean, I don't know. You get a few... early in the year. We've been overtime quite a few times, and when you get the opportunities, you just try and score, and it's worked out. So I didn't even realize. I guess I have five now, and I guess I tied Steven Stamkos. So he got five a few years ago, which blows me away that he did a four-on-four. So I don't know. That's pretty incredible. So
it's been fun.
Hopefully that success will keep going. Though. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, it's been fun, and it's funny. He's got five game winners, and he wasn't sure of the number. I won a wiffle ball game when I was nine. I still tell this story. Dave Ennett and Doc, say hi to Taser.
Good morning.
How you doing, guys? Hey, Doc.
Have you had any interesting conversations with Patrick Sharp during these Dallas games?
No, just kind of saying hello and kind of giving him a shot in the shin pads and warm up.
Good.
That's about it. I think he's definitely played hard in the two games that we have played each other. You know, he's the type of guy that always feels he's got something to prove. He wants to go out there. He wants to play with an edge, and he wants to win. So after that, after warm-ups, that's about it. He was focused on his game, and he wasn't messing around. So they got the best of us back in December. We were able to get a little revenge last week when we were in town. So kind of anticipating it's going to be another good one tonight.
I know every game is so important for you, and you're looking at the next opponent. But knowing that at the same time, this is a team that was leading the division until you guys went on your hot streak, is it kind of been in the back of your mind, John, that you've had this game coming up here at home against Dallas and both of these matchups this week, but this one here tonight?
Well, I think both teams have had pretty good years. We've been neck and neck for a while now at the top of the division. I think given the fact that, I mean, until we made a couple trades, you know, Ryan Garbutt and Trevor Daley obviously had a chip on their shoulder playing against their old team, and we got a couple guys who played a number of years here in Chicago and it meant a tremendous deal to this team and the championships we won here. So I think when you have guys like that on each team, there's no doubt it makes it a little bit more personal. So I think that rivalry is something that's maybe developing a little bit right now.
At Sharpie's age, are you worried when you give him that stick smack? Because with brittle bones at his age, you could really hurt him.
No, not really. You know, he's still flying out there. He's as hungry as ever. I think he's playing great hockey, so it's good to see. Just try and get him to pace himself a little bit when he comes in here. He'll definitely be. We know he'll be ready for this game tonight. So, you know, we'll try and slow him down as much as we can.
You guys may not get a lot of this, but Coach Q is pretty good at picking on himself after his head explodes. And the last couple of times we've had one of these contested goals, he's not been terribly pleased. And he did one of the best press conference walk-offs I've ever seen the other night. But when he took the stick and started smacking it against the boards, what's going through your head?
Well, you know, he brings it. He brings the emotion. Right. You know, I think as a team, we respond the right way in that game against Phoenix. It can go one of two ways. I think we collected ourselves really well. I think Joel was a part of that, reminding us in the locker room that sometimes we get a little distracted and get on the refs. But for the rest of us at our job, we just need to keep playing and things will happen for us. Again, a couple calls, I think even the one last game, still debatable. I don't know. I've seen the video a bunch of times. It's hard to let some of those go. But at the end of the day, you know, it's up to the coaches to kind of worry about that stuff. And Joel does a good job. And, you know, if he wants to show that emotion, that's just kind of who he is. And we know that. We expect that, I guess.
I want to get Doc and Dave in here for one more. But as a player, what's the most frustrating penalty? I know they're all frustrating. But what's the most frustrating penalty to get called? Because from a fan's perspective, interference drives us nuts.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that the most frustrating thing is maybe the inconsistency where we see some things that are like go early in the game and then all of a sudden it's called later on. And then you have a tough time gauging what the standard is in a game. So, I don't know. To me, that's probably the most frustrating thing when it's inconsistent on both teams. But again, you always kind of have a biased opinion in that case.
Your line mate is closing in on a milestone 500 goals. Marian Hossa is getting close to that. What does that number mean to you?
It's unbelievable. It's huge. Yeah, I don't know the amount of players that have accomplished that, but I know it's not a lot in the grand scheme of things. And just the way Hossa has played his entire career and what he's done here in Chicago, it's been a pleasure to be alongside him and to experience, be a part of someone who's going to close on a milestone like that is, I think, special for anyone who's a part of it.
You get to talk to the referee first, even before he goes over to talk to Coach Q, who you can see is angry sometimes. Has there ever been a conversation with a referee that left you laughing as you went back to the bench to explain it?
Yeah, I think there's a few where, you know, I don't know. I guess the way that you can really try and, you know, the more you yell, the more you scream, I think they just shut off and they don't listen to you. I think that the best thing you can do is just kind of look at them a little disbelief and just completely question whether they're making the right call or not. So we've had a few moments like that, but it is what it is. They got a tough job to do. So I try to not make it too tough because I know they got to go through me and then I'll eventually get to Joel and that's never any fun either. So
yeah, sometimes he'll go over to Joel and he'll go, listen, for the sake of both of us, I don't have enough on me right now and bail because it's hard to carry my wallet in these pants. So let me handle this one.
I won't comment on that.
Like I said, love is passion. Matt Chin from Chicago writes in Breakfast of the Blackhawk question of the day, and Matt's going to get an autographed Blackhawks puck. What's your breakfast consist of before a game?
Well, I'm heading in to eat right now. We're at the rink. Usually just a couple eggs mixed with some veggies, some sauerkraut, some potatoes. We have a lot of green smoothies here at the rink, too.
I don't eat anything green. I love those green smoothies. They smell like your front lawn, but they taste great.
Yeah. That's how you know it's good for you.
See, I told you, Steve.
Taser and I, we both treat our bodies like a temple, except mine's more shaped like a temple. That's the problem. Captain, great talking to you. Thanks to MB Financial Bank. Appreciate you taking the time and have fun tonight.
No problem, Steve. Thanks, fellas. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Okay. A Buddhist temple.
Yeah, a Buddhist temple. That's exactly right.
Still a good joke.
I don't care how long I've been doing that joke. It's still a good joke.
That's so funny.
You know, you brought up a great point, though, because he's the guy that's got to – he's like Kissinger to Nixon.
Right.
He's the guy that's got to go over to Q and try to explain it for a second or two before the linesman comes over and takes his punishment.
If I were he, what I would do is I'd go to the referee and say, now, you see that guy over there? I got to explain this to him. Do you want to explain it to him or do you want to tell me? Now, to begin with, I don't agree with anything you've done so far tonight, just
right.
To get that straight.
Right, but you probably have a family and kids that love you. So let me help you. Help me help you. Again, thanks, MB Financial Bank. MB Financial. Do they have a slogan that we need to hit here?
MB means business.
That's exactly right, Kevin. MB means business. Congratulations, Kevin. You've won nothing. Can you hang around for a second?
Sure.
All right.
We have a presentation to make.
Oh, we do?
Yeah.
All right. More with Doc in just a second at 720 WGN.
Led to the back now. It is walked on by Richard. Side of the net to Kane. Gave it on back. Bosa. Blocked away by Hedman. Kane feathered it through. Hedman got in the way. Strong play by the Lightning defenseman. It's Shaw filtering it back. Bosa got it there. Handed it on to Richards. Richards fires. Scott!
It's just the best. Oh, it's the best.
Thank you.
Our special guest, Doc Emmerich. Nice to stop by in town. He and Eddie Olczyk doing a little bit of, is it NHL 17?
Yes. And yeah, this will be our third year working together on that, yeah.
And what is that, a summer release?
It comes out in the fall, just in time for the start of the season.
You know, I know you love Eddie, and I know you love working with Eddie. What makes him special as a wingman?
He's 20 years younger than I am, and I've always said I hope 20 years from now when he's still working, he's got somebody like himself. Because as you get travel weary, and I'm doing fewer games now just because of, you know, I preferred to. It was starting to get to be 120 games a year was a lot of games.
That's a lot of games.
But to have somebody that's always got your back and is always eagle eye on things like deflections on goals that can help you. Because if you're following the puck and you're identifying players, sometimes you can't follow. It goes so fast, you can't follow deflections. and he can immediately signal me a deflection. But that helps. That's teamwork.
But there's something interesting that goes on, and Dave, you can speak to this as well as your old friend Pat Hughes. There's nothing the three of you haven't seen in hockey or baseball or football or basketball. So there's a skill to being deferential to your analyst,
mm-hmm.
even if you know exactly what you've seen and what your analyst has seen. So how do you pick those spots?
They become pretty easy after this many years, but originally you just search for them. And I'd worked with other people before, and it was a very easy adjustment because Eddie and I did radio together in the conference finals each year for NHL radio back in the days they had that.
Okay.
And so we understood each other then, and I understood that, you know, if it was Pimlico or something like that, he was going to – I'd have to cover the morning skate. He'd get there
sure.
later on.
Sure,
but there was there's just that rhythm that you get back and forth together. And you know there's nobody that can diagram how a goal happened better than this guy. And he sees it without having seen the video. The fans are still cheering, and he's going live on the first replay because he knows how it happened. Not many guys are that way. I think he probably has photographic memory, but – if he's got a photographic memory, why does he need a racing form? Right?
He'd have to ask his girlfriend. Under
All
her.
Right, now, don't be dissing on my man.
Is that the same for you with Ted, Dave?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit different. And Doc, I think you acknowledged you did radio. I mean, radio and TV, it's a little bit different role there, mm-hmm. play-by-play versus analyst.
Well, they're flipped, know? Right? They're reversed.
Well, kind of. I mean, to a certain extent, true.
Yeah, in TV, I think the analyst becomes exponentially more important.
Yeah, and if the ball's in play, you got to be talking.
Right.
If it's stopped for a timeout, that's his time, but... if people hear the ball bouncing in the background and somebody else is talking beside you, of course it does.
Yeah.
Then there's an uncertainty there because, mm-hmm. hey, something's happening. I heard the puck hit the glass, and they're still reading a commercial. Well, that's the nature of our business.
No doubt about it. And that's one of the reasons that Weidemann is so good.
He is excellent.
If you can show me one time where Weidemann has been slower than the crowd, because point being, you hear the crowd scream, you don't want your play-by-play guy 10 seconds later to go, go!
Right, right.
He's always on it.
And that's why those replays that occasionally I hear in the middle of the night when I've got the station on the way to the airport, those replays are so great because he's ahead of the crowd. And if you can be ahead of the crowd and accurate, you got two of the best three. And if you get paid for doing it, that's the third thing.
Plus, the seats are pretty good.
Yeah, they are.
Doc, do you enjoy the outdoor games?
Yes, I do. They are a challenge to do accurately, but you realize that event is not necessarily for calling all the names and numbers. Now, we're going up to do the Hawks game in Minnesota.
Oh, you are? Good.
Yeah. And we will be sitting in the same seats that Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth did when it was +6. And they, I understand, used blankets that day to stay warm. They have taken some more precautions for us, but we will be in the elements, that's for sure. But it'll be fun, and the players, if you watch the players and the close-ups of them, it's a game for 2 points, but there's also an energy and a joy to being out there. And
kids!
Yeah.
Pond hockey!
That's right.
Can you bring a small fire pit, maybe?
They do have them down the way in the big Dairy Queen suite that they have that people pay a lot of money for, but we pay a lot of money for something different, I guess.
Andrea and Kevin can speak to this. The coldest we have ever been, and I've been in a lot of – I've lived in Minnesota for 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
The coldest we've ever been was the Hawks Soldier Field game where we did a pregame for 3 hours.
You did?
Where our booth was set up facing Lake Michigan. Good call there. And then went in.
And they were able to defreeze a majority of that fan fest area except exactly where we were sitting. So we were basically in an ice box for 3 hours. And
Doc, I took a picture of Kevin with the snow piled about, 4 inches on top of his head.
Because you may remember, Doc, it only stopped snowing for those 3 hours, 2.5 hours, for about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It snowed almost for the entire game.
You'll like this. Eddie and I and Gary Bettman are walking out of the runway at Soldier Field about 2 hours before game time, and we walk out, and I see the first snow come down, and I'm thinking, does this guy have contact with the hockey gods or something, that here the snow is just starting? And then, of course, in the game, one of my great memories is there was a body check on the near glass, and snow fell off the shelf down onto the floor. It's just
great TV.
It was terrific TV, and in an historic place too.
Yeah, it's tons of fun. I know you got to run, but you said you had a presentation?
Yes, back in January you were doing resolutions, and you said you were giving up chocolate.
Yes,
and I promised that at some time when you decided not to give up chocolate, you would have a five-pound Hershey bar, and it's behind you.
Oh, yeah.
You are something else. Is that right?
A promise is a promise.
Let me tell you something. This is why other countries hate us. The rest of this radio station will be eating chocolate today, baby. Doc, you're the best.
Thanks.
Nice to
Good
see you.
Good to see you
Thank
all.
Thank you, Doc.
Safe travels.
Nice meeting you, Andres.
You too, Doc.
And let's do this. Let's do the big story right now. Tomorrow on the show, it's my annual Valentine's Day gift-giving tips for men. Because tomorrow we'll take texts from women on terrible gifts that they got. We've got a decent chunk of men who have chimed in today, Dave, because you and I are sensitive. How many times, Dave, have you had to look at a woman and go, hey, my eyes are up here?
Yeah, all the time.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Yeah. I can see that.
And me too. I tell people, hey, I'm more than a body. I'm a brain too.
I want to know what kind of gifts you guys have gotten for Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
I need some ideas. Like, what, boxer shorts? I mean, what do you give a guy?
Boxers. That's not a bad idea, maybe, you know?
I think you
it's
have
tough.
To. I think what you have to do is you have to think, you know, before you were married, what sort of effort you put into to get into your husband's pants and, you know, go back to that mindset.
That was quite a while ago.
She'd buy him a Walkman back then.
Well, that's just it. She goes back to that mindset and she gets him a Sony Walkman.
Right, a mixtape.
A couple of more texters here, and then Andrea has some Valentine's Day stats, kind of a quiz she's going to put on us, and we got a Hawk Wikipedia to do as well. From the 630, best Valentine's gift any Chicagoan can give or get is a heart-shaped pizza. Cue Kevin.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Well, that's a good idea.
We're getting heart-shaped pizzas tomorrow.
That's what I'm talking about.
We Breakfast. Are?
Yeah, Luz is going to drop some off because Luz is the best.
224, my wife gave me a leisure cruise. I dropped her off at the airport to fly out and see her mother. I had the leisure. 630, got a calendar from a girlfriend. It was cool. It had hot rods on it. It was 2008.
Yeah.
There got go, the Mary. Calendar this year.
Wouldn't any sort of like Apple or, you know, what do you have, a Galaxy? Some sort of, I don't know, phone
I don't know
cover?
That you need
Wouldn't
to
that be kind of cool?
Oh, yeah, something gadget related to
gadget
the gadget. Look, we're not hard to figure out. That's the thing. Women always go, I can't figure out men. We're not that hard to figure out. We function on very limited capabilities. We can lift heavy stuff. We can get stuff off the high shelves. We're interested in food, sex, and sports. Is that hard?
So food-shaped Reese's peanut butter cups would be fine. Heart-shaped, I mean.
779 actually had a nice gift, a Citizen dive watch. Well, that is a nice gift. Mm. Unfortunately, she left the receipt in the bag, thought it was a gift receipt. Turns out it was used on her boyfriend's credit card. Oh. Wrong receipt.
Mm. Oops.
So that's just a handful more from men talking about the rough stuff they got from women. All right, give us the Valentine's quiz, and we'll get to the hockey.
All right, here's the quiz. Total of Valentine's Day spending projected for 2016. So how much will Americans spend on Valentine's Day this year? Whether
right,
it's dinner,
you had a ball
or candy.
Of flowers, dinner,
yeah.
And
total.
Well, candy's here because Doc Emmerich got us a five-pound chocolate bar.
From Dylan's, yeah.
I would say it's something north of $1 billion.
That's very low. Any other guesses?
I would say $4
billion. $20 billion.
On Valentine's Day.
Is what Americans are going to spend. This is from
WalletHub. And $19.995 billion of it is men spending on women.
Right. All right. Now, this is how many proposals across the United States made on Valentine's Day? How many women, or men, I guess now, how many proposals will there be on Valentine's
15.
Day?
15.
Yeah, I mean, that's so hard. Like, nationwide?
It's
nationwide.
A lot. Yep.
Nationwide, 27,500.
That's way low.
Okay.
85,000.
Way low.
What?
500,000.
14 million proposals are made on Valentine's Day.
It's not a great idea to propose or get married on holidays.
All right, and final stat?
My son got married last Valentine's Day.
Oh.
Hope they're still together.
All right, well.
Yeah. It's only been a year.
What percentage of women, now this is mean, what percent of women say they would break up with their significant other if they didn't get anything for Valentine's Day?
What percentage of women asked would break up if they didn't get anything for Valentine's Day?
Is this their spouse or a girlfriend or boyfriend? What do you mean?
It's probably a girlfriend situation.
It no. just says what percent of women say
Brandon
they would
says break up,
break
not divorce.
Up. Yeah.
I would say 20%.
50.
Dave?
Keep in mind the female said 50.
Then I would say 75.
That's very smart. Good call, Mary. 53% of women say that they would break up with their significant other if they didn't get anything for Valentine's Day.
Wow.
Yeah, well, it's pretty hard not to remember Valentine's Day.
I got to tell you, if it actually takes that as the last straw, you probably missed the other straws.
Right.
You know my favorite Valentine's Day gift story? And I don't know when I'll be able to tell this. Anna DeVlantis.
Oh, this is the best. We should have her tell this.
Anna DeVlantis, when she was dating this loser.
Who's not her husband. This is not her husband.
No, it's a different
loser.
He's
a great guy.
No, we love David. But Anna DeVlantis was dating this guy, and she comes over to do the auto show with me. I think she was working at Channel 5 at that point. And she comes over. I go, well, what? I can't remember the guy's name. I said, what did he get you for Valentine's Day? And she said, I don't want to talk about it.
See, I don't think this was that horrible of a
and
gift.
It's a terrible gift. I said, I convinced her to tell me. Wiper blades for her car.
But she needed them, right?
It's practical.
Did wiper he install blades. Them, too?
He did not.
Well, that's bad.
Wiper blades.
That's bad.
How is wiper blades in it? Okay, then get her a blender and a vacuum cleaner as well. How are wiper blades an acceptable Valentine's Day gift? Am I the only romantic left? Back after this on 720 WGN.
Blackhawks Radio.
720 WGN.
Uh-huh. The Steve Cochran Show presents Hawk.
Chicago.
Opedia.
We may get a fracas here before it all ends.
A what?
Hawkopedia is sponsored by Freshwave, the official deodorizer of your Chicago Blackhawks. If there's a stinky Canadian in your life, put some Freshwave near him and he'll smell like an American. Back to you, Dave.
Interference on the goalkeeper. By now, everybody has heard this, Joel Quenneville from Tuesday.
Well, I don't know the rules anymore or something's changed because, you know, my understanding, played a lot of hockey, that I don't know. I mean, I think everybody has an interpretation of what's a good goal and what's a bad goal. But I can't believe it.
And that was Quenneville
cutting
short.
And that's when he threw his hands up and walked up.
And he walked out of his post-game news conference after the Blackhawks lost to San Jose and for the second time in three games had a goal overturned after a challenge by the opposition claiming goaltender interference.
By the way, he's really excited about mustache night.
Oh, is he really?
Yes, very, very excited about mustache night.
How excited?
Well, before this is over, we're going to tell you how excited.
Well, we thought we'd go to the rule book and find out exactly what goaltender interference is.
Tell me.
According to Rule 69.1, not all goals scored by attacking players standing in the goal crease will be disallowed. According to the rule, goals will be disallowed only if an attacking player, either by his position or contact, impairs the goalie's ability to move freely within his crease or defend his goal, or if an attacking player initiates intentional contact inside or outside the crease. Contact is any contact between players, whether with the stick or the body. Now, the intent of the rule is to allow a goaltender to move freely within the crease, unhindered by an attacking player. Also, let's say the goaltender's own teammate makes contact with him. If he's been pushed or shoved by an attacking player, then that's the same as if that attacking player had actually made contact with the goaltender.
I don't like the rule.
Well, it's still there still seems to be a lot of confusion about it.
I think you should give the goalie maybe a pellet gun just to protect his area.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
So goalie interference.
That's what the rule book says.
All right.
But I don't think that's really going to settle too much in Joel Quenneville's mind or in the minds of other people around the league.
He's got a lot on his mind these days. Mm-hmm. You know, like you were out doing the Northwestern game, but we brought up mustache night. This is an idea I've had. Look, I'm just a boy with a dream. And this is an idea I had a while ago where we would have fans at a Blackhawks game get Joel Quenneville mustaches. And, yeah, I brought it up a long time. Well, here's what he said the other day. Oh, and next time you and I talk, it appears the long-awaited Coach Q mustache night is going to happen. I'll have details next time we talk.
All right. Okay.
Well, don't act like you're less excited. I mean, come on, man.
First I heard of it.
What are you talking about? I brought this up months ago, and now it's finally happening.
Yeah, but I didn't see it. I didn't see a delivery.
I actually got scolded by Coach Q. I suppose that's kind of an honor. It's like being insulted by Don Rickles. By the way, that happened as well. But I got scolded by Coach Q.
blew a gasket there for sure.
Yes, he did. Back with Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN.
Wendy's here. She was making out with Doc Emmerich for a few minutes.
Oh, will you stop
what?
It.
Was that on the air?
It's a mutual admiration, and
listen,
sometimes
Doc
things get out of hand.
You love Doc. We love Doc.
I love Doc's wife. He loves my husband. Maybe we're swingers. I don't know.
Yeah,
he loves dogs. Animals.
Doc, somebody texted this, and it's true. You know, we always talk about how approachable the players are.
Yeah.
Doc's a big deal in TV sports.
Oh, yeah.
He's a big deal in sports in general, and he couldn't be a more regular guy.
The other guys that do what he does, including Dave, look to him. That's the guy.
He is the national, we should have mentioned
this. The national treasure is what he is.
Sportscaster of the year this year.
Again. He's the Vin Scully of hockey.
You saw the piece on Inside Sports that they did about a month
ago. Oh, on the Real Sports.
Yeah, Real Sports. Yeah, with Brian Gumbel.
It's great.
Other guys who are at the top of the game were all saying, yeah, really, I like to do what I do, but that guy knows what he's doing, and it's true.
And he goes around and he talks to everybody before the game. In that piece, I think they showed he went to the organist and some other people. It's like when Dave goes to a game, you can't look him directly in the eye.
Right.
Go Cats.
He has to be escorted to and from immediately from there.
He has to focus.
Well, and if his shrimp cocktail, you know how many students have been kicked out of Northwestern for not having his shrimp ready?
Yep.
It's not a lot to ask.
You gotta draw
Diva
the
Dave. Diva.
The Diva Dave. 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 Oh. Diva. We'll be back tomorrow for more Valentine's Day chicanery. What? Here's Bill and what did I miss, Kev?
We should probably plug Blackhawks tickets tomorrow, 7:20.
Oh, that'll be good. Mm-hmm. I'm coming in then. Ooh. Here's Bill and Wendy.